And welcome to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yetta. Each weekday morning here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and deadly myths that are associated with religion, politics, patriotism, the media, military, and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission here is to help understand what is occurring behind the headlines and also keeping an eye to how these things will shape our world over the next 10 years. During our second hour, we engage God on His terms by way of His covenant and through His Torah, enabling everyone who is desirous of doing so with replacing their religion with reason so that they can engage in a meaningful relationship. Our number for those who would like to participate in this discussion over the next 2 hours is 877-300-7645. Received a number of emails from a news junkie friend of mine that is fascinated by all the things that are happening, particularly what they portend for the world. He wrote, did you happen to catch any of the media's coverage of the opening of the new $250 million Bush Library? Now, it's really not a library, of course, these things. They're monuments to ex-presidents. They're puff pieces designed to elevate the individuals who hold the office of president to saintly status in the country. So it's really a $250 million shrine to an absolute moron. They gave his comments. He says, you know, during my youth, you would never see me in a library, and now I've founded one. He wrote, they gave these guys almost iconic status. One CNN reporter who described himself as a political junkie was giddy as he described what it was like to be in the presence of the presidents all gathered together in one place. He says these political leaders are afforded a status that is unbecoming. Honestly, he said, I don't know what they've done to deserve such reverence. The country's credit rating has been downgraded. The national debt is completely out of control, as is federal spending. The foreign wars that we've engaged in have made very bad situations much worse. And we've endured another brutal Islamic terrorist attack with the government witnessing it, even though they were forewarned about it. It's questionable, too, isn't it? You know, you look at Washington, D.C., and you see the obelisk, the pagan shrine, the Egyptian monument to the god Amen-Ra, resurrected as a Freemasonry shrine, religious shrine to George Washington, whose driving force in his life was Freemasonry, which is a rather overtly a satanic religion. In fact, it was Morals and Dogma, written by Pike, who crafted the tenets of Freemasonry. Freemasonry was actually usurped by Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Order of the Illuminus, the guy that came up with the whole concept of political correctness and socialist secular humanism. Karl Marx was actually writing on behalf of the legacy of Adam Weishaupt. The French Revolution, the Jacobins, were a derivative of Weishaupt's ideology. Thomas Jefferson, the famed American president, was a Jacobin, while folks like Washington were Freemasons. In fact, the Freemasons dominated early American life. It is not a religion that would be at all akin to Christianity. It bears a lot more in common with Islam. But it was in reading Morals and Dogma that I came to understand how Satan in Islam can be both Allah and be opposed to Satan. It is explained at the conclusion of Morals and Dogma, where Satan, they speak of him as the great light bearer, as Lucifer, because of the Latin loosens the concept of lux and light in Latin. It's a made-up name, of course. It's not his actual name. His actual name is Halal bin Shakar. But in the Morals and Dogma, it says that Satan says, you know, I have no interest in being known as Satan, which is Hebrew for the adversary. And I do not wish to be known or worshipped as the adversary, but as God. And then the lights went off. Of course, that's why in the Quran, Satan is attacked. That's why in Paul's letters, Satan is assailed. He does not want to be known as the adversary. He wants to destroy the adversary concept. He wants to look like the adversary is the bad guy, but yet he himself should be worshipped as the Lord God. So it is interesting how America has built shrines to these presidents. The Lincoln Memorial is actually called a shrine. It's a temple in its legal definition. So is the monument erected to Thomas Jefferson, who would have been appalled by such things. And, of course, the obelisk to Washington is overtly religious, pagan, sun god, and Freemasonry in its orientation. So it is indeed sad that America has raised the status of these men to saints and almost godlike in their reverence. He went on in another email to me. The same individual wrote, on today's show, you define the word radicalized. And it's actually, it shouldn't be used as a verb. It is primarily an adjective. It is a noun, but it's a noun only in the sciences. And so it is a corrupted term, if you will. It is a very viable noun in the sciences. And it is used as an adjective, but to use it as a verb, to say that someone has been radicalized, is pushing the language way beyond any reasonable level. And when you do that, when you start taking words out of their proper meaning and proper context to twist them, there's an obvious realization that most people don't want to embrace, which is that collectively, people are lying. And when you see radical Islam or just a self-radicalized, as the media is now covering this, and you see the same term, self-radicalized, as a verb, used by almost all politicians, by almost everyone in the media, print and electronic media, and by most everybody in law enforcement, when everyone is using the same kind of term, and that term is inappropriate, as we discovered yesterday, then you know that there is a conspiracy. That there is no other rational conclusion when the same word is used ubiquitously by everyone in three desperate institutions, all at the same time, all for the express purpose of misleading. That is absolute proof of a conspiracy. Now, how far you want to take that is your choice, but we are all being lied to by our government, by our media, and by those who are tasked with enforcing America's laws. According to many reports, and this friend of mine wrote, they are also desperately searching for Mishnah. They're just absolutely desperate to find out who radicalized these brothers, because right now all they're left with is self-radicalization. So this mysterious radicalizer, whose existence has been corroborated now by the mother. Now, that's really funny, corroborated by the mother. She believes, of course, all this was staged, claiming that she definitely recognized the naked body of a person that the police apprehended and put into a car in the immediate aftermath of the bombing. It is all so bizarre. One of the things that I shared with you the other day was that how inappropriate the gunfire exchange was between Joe Carr and the SWAT teams that were there on the scene once the neighbor had the boat owner found Joe Carr in the boat, and he just saw the blood trail. It was obvious. Walked up to the boat, saw the tarp had been cut, saw the blood trail, looked inside, and there was this guy virtually comatose in pain in the boat, having lost so much blood. And so the at orders from the highest level had to be from all the way to President Obama's cabinet. The decision was made that we don't want to take this guy alive. Let's see what happens after we fire several hundred rounds of automatic weaponry into the boat. And that's what they did. So that long 3-minute ordeal of rapid fire, and you can see the muzzle blasts out of the guns. All of that was in one direction. Joe Carr didn't even have a weapon in the boat. All of this bravery, we're talking about all the brave men that apprehended him. Here they were in full body armor, shooting automatic weapons, which Americans can't even own, assault weapons, into a plastic boat with a man lying in it with full view of it because of the infrared kind of cameras. And in a community packed with houses and people, law enforcement is shooting hundreds and hundreds of rounds at an unarmed man in a boat, in a plastic boat. Completely and totally inappropriate, but there's no outcry against it. The was more information on Mommy Joker yesterday, too. I had shared with you that she was did not want to come to America because she skipped bail. She was arrested and has a trial pending that she welched on for having shoplifted. Well, it wasn't minor shoplifting. Mommy Joker stole $1,500 of clothes from a Lord & Taylor. It's grand larceny. After the younger brother, this is also interested, admitted that they had perpetrated the bombing to defend Islam, the mainstream media outlets continued to search for explanations. How, when someone confesses to the crime, does one still search for explanations? It's like 9/11. In the voice recorders of all of the airplanes that were crashed into our buildings, as well as the one that was crashed into a field, 100% of the commentary was reading of the Quran and screaming Allahu Akbar. Why does one need a confession? It is Islam, stupid. I am Yada. We'll return to Shattering Myths after the break. Hello, welcome back to Shattering Myths. We were speaking about Mommy Tamerlane, Mommy Joker, one of the most repulsive people on the planet. It's easy to see how the boys became fundamentalist Muslims, how they became welfare cheats, how they became thieves, how they became drug dealers, how they became mass murderers. They got it from their mother. It was not in their genes. It was in the mother's religion. She spoke about, as did the uncle, an Armenian man called Mishnah, who became a family friend, mind you, a family friend. That means that Mommy Bomber and Daddy Bomber were also embraced this fellow Mishnah back in 2007 when they were all one jolly family here in the United States as welfare cheats. And she said that her eldest son, Tamerlan, had respected him very much for his adherence to Islam, as did Mommy Tamerlane and Mommy Joker. Respected him very much for his adherence to Islam. So even if you were to find this Mishnah, and let's just pretend for a moment that he is the one in a million Armenians that decided to convert to Islam, is it Mishnah's fault or is it Islam's fault? I know that's a tough question, but it doesn't seem like anybody in the media or in politics can answer it. She denied that her son, however, had been radicalized after his six-month visit to Dagestan last year, saying that she saw no changes in him on his return. Then this from Watertown, Mass. The people of Watertown, which is heavily Armenian, were casting doubts on the claims by the relatives of the Boston bombing suspect that an Armenian convert to Islam was somehow at fault. It is beyond comprehension that the media is even running with that story. We'll get to the Armenian angle here just in a second. But if the person who indoctrinated the boys in Islam was a devout Muslim, isn't Islam still the bottom line problem? Anyway, this from the Armenian community says, quote, "For an Armenian convert to Islam, or finding an Armenian convert to Islam is like finding a unicorn in a field," Zurabhan, an information technology director who lives in Cambridge. "It would be such a shock to the Armenian community that a Armenian converted to Islam that everyone in the community would know such a person." The Associated Press reported Tuesday that relatives of Tamerlan Shanarev, the older of the two suspects, well, he's no longer a suspect, he's dead, say that he came under the influence of a man named Mishnah who preached to him in his kitchen and turned him into a radical form of Islam. Of course, we know that radical is inappropriate in the form of Islam that the brothers professed is fundamentalist. It's the Islam that is presented in the Quran and in the Hadith. I'm very familiar with it since I've written the most comprehensive book on the Quran and Hadith. Shanarev's uncle in Maryland, Ruslan, and his former brother-in-law in Kazakhstan, Al-Mirza, said that the man was Armenian, was an Armenian convert who was heavyset, bald, and around 30, and had a reddish beard. I think now what we need to do is we need to bar Armenians from the country, either that or bald men, red-headed men, or anyone of the age of 30. That would be the culprit here. We don't want to blame the bombings on Islam, so let's go after red-headed, bald men. I don't know, maybe that's an oxymoron. A couple of hundred Armenians gathered outside the St. Stephen's Armenian Apostolic Church on Wednesday to commemorate 98 years since the start of the conflict that Armenians recall as a genocide by Ottoman Turks that belongs in the same category as the Holocaust. Before it was over, 1.5 million Armenians were murdered. 1.5 million was a little more than half of the population of Armenia that was killed at one time. If your math's not really good, 98 years ago means that this occurred in the immediate aftermath of World War I. The Turks, who considered themselves, you know, ruthless fighters, you know, the ego of Muslims, oh, we are the best warriors in the world. With Allah's help, we will kill anybody. The Muslims from Turkey had decided that they had an opportunity to go after the Tsar and to conquer more land for the Ottoman Empire. And they got their clock cleaned by the Tsar. And so on the way back, as Muslims do, if you read the Hadith in the Quran, you'll see this all over the Hadith and Quran. Every time Muhammad's men took a licking, they found a patsy to abuse. That's what happened with the Armenians. We'll talk about it in a moment. Talking about the Armenian community, since an Armenian named Mishnah is now being sought, being blamed for having radicalized the bomber boys. The reason that is so unlikely, it's not impossible, but certainly unlikely, is that one of the world's most egregious genocides that took place actually was a precursor and a model that Hitler followed based upon insights he received from the Grand Mufti of Jerusalem, Mohammad Husseini, who was actually a participant in the genocide in Turkey, that the Armenians the Turks got manhandled by the Tsar's troops. And on the way back, just as it had occurred on four occasions with Muhammad, Muhammad's goons lost four battles. There were four times when they weren't able to confiscate booty and satiate their bloodlust. And on each of the four times, the Quran and Hadith depict the first Muslims raiding defenseless Jewish communities. One by one, robbing them of their possessions, killing the men, raping the women, selling the children into slavery. The exact same thing happened some 1,300 years later when the Ottoman Turks, Muslims, lost their battle. It's their mindset, the ego that goes along with being a Muslim, is commiserate with Satan's ego. And so they were all distraught, having lost the battle on the way back through eastern Turkey, northeastern Turkey, to their homes. They were given the authorization to take out their bloodlust and their covetousness on Armenians, and they savaged them. They murdered the men. They raped the women. They forced the children into long marches. They killed half the population. It was one of the most reprehensible acts in human history. Of course, if you even want to talk about it, Turkey will say we'll have no diplomatic ties with you, and will curse and scream and holler and all sorts of things. You want to talk about it, but that's the truth. And so, for an Armenian to convert to Islam, you have to be especially stupid. Well, this Armenian in Watertown, Massachusetts, says that goes on to say that our identity and faith are so intertwined to our traditions that we don't distinguish between one and the other. He said, and that's true in so many communities. It's one of the reasons people are so lost. Their identity and their religion are intertwined. It is true with the Armenians. Over the centuries, as Islam became dominant in the region, Armenians suffered several massacres, but even in the face of extinction, we did not convert. To Chris Hajian, 39, a financial analyst from Waltham, the Mishnah story sounded like a fabrication. He said it's a little suspicious with all of the conspiracy theories they've come up with, Hajian said, referring to reports that the Sarnarev's mother said that her sons were set up by the FBI and that 9/11 was an attack by the U.S. government on its own people. And now they're looking to blame someone else. Moving on to another aspect of this story, we now know that not only was the FBI tipped off by the Russians, but so was the CIA, and that they did not communicate with one another, and that now they're all up in arms trying to figure out, okay, what really happened when Tamerlan went to the Chechnyan region. He went to Dagestan to help his father upgrade his apartment. Back a year or so ago, and thus far there is nothing that seems to have come out of that. And let's just say that they find that Sarnarev, Tamerlan had a long chat with a fundamentalist Islamist while he was visiting Dagestan. How would that affect the reality that he conducted the bombing because he was trying to advance the cause of Allah, that he was fighting in the cause of Allah? The fact that he found a sympathetic individual there would be irrelevant. You know, there is this tendency of American journalists to try to present Islamic terrorists as being justified. They do it all the time with Hamas and the PLO and the mythical land of Palestine, where they say, you know, they're just fighting for their survival and because the Jews are oppressing them and are occupying their lands. in the case of Russia, it's true that Russia, unlike Israel, is a brute. And Israel is Russia is not going to give up its control over the Caucasus region because of the oil and gas reserves that are in the Caspian Sea and the need to run the pipelines through Chechnya. And so they're not going to give up Chechnya. It's all about wealth and the new world currency being oil. The same thing. Reason is why the Russians invaded Georgia when the Georgian Republic wanted independence, got independence, and then became a slave state again of Russia. The Muslim population, of course, wants the country ruled by Islamic law. And so they have become the most savage terrorists in the world for that cause. It would be impossible to find more savage, more immoral, more violent people than the Chechenian Muslims. They're the worst of a bad lot. They are involved right now in the Syrian rebellion and are probably the most savage there as well. But when you look at the terrorist plots that have been perpetrated and hospitals and at schools and at theaters by the Chechenian Muslims, they are, right down to the core, the most savage and immoral perpetrated in the world today. So that's the kind of the background of all of this. And then, so you're turning to Washington. He says, you know, the disclosure of a second warning from the Russians raised concerns of whether the CIA and FBI had failed to share information. They had failed to do the job. You know, here the FBI says, we interviewed Shinarev following the first trip, and we found absolutely no serious threat. Why? Because in the training materials for FBI agents, there is every mention of Islam. Was redacted first by the George W. Bush administration and then remained off limits in the Obama administration. So there is no reference to Islam. So the fact that Islam was the motivation for the attack and the training materials for the FBI remove any reference to Islam, they didn't find any reason to be concerned. You know, it's like saying that gasoline can be used to run your car, and if you don't have gasoline, your car won't run. So on the manual for the car, let's remove all reference to gasoline. And then when somebody says, you know, the car won't run, and they said, but we don't understand, can't come up with any reason as to why the car won't run, the same exact situation is true with Islam being the fuel of terrorism. And when you remove all references to Islam and terrorism, then you've got no idea why terrorism occurs. So here's the senators in Washington saying that, that this lack of communication is something we need to look at again. It's the very thing that came out of the 9/11 findings, is that they don't communicate with one another. So either they're complicit in the terror that is being perpetrated on America, or they're so incompetent they should all be fired. But most certainly they should not be praised. It looks like the bomb, one senator said, this is actually a congressman, Dutch Rupsingberger, said, it looks like the bomb was based upon one presented on Inspire magazine on how to build a bomb in mom's kitchen. Thank you very much, congressman. We knew that the moment we heard that it was a pressure cooker. Another congressman said that the Boston bombings pose a new kind of threat to the United States, where we are now facing more of what Europe has faced, with an alienation of part of the immigration of population that is self-radicalized. Can't, for the life of him, come up with the one common denominator in all this. We've invited the poison of Islam into the country. Jokar has told individuals, all the investigators, that he and his brothers acted without assistance from any foreign or domestic militant groups. That's what they wrote in their confession. That's what they've said. That is what is obvious. Shinarev has told investigators that he and his brothers acted without any assistance from any foreign or domestic militant group, according to all the members of Congress who have been briefed by law enforcement. Quote, that basically seems to be the story. But I don't see how we can accept that. Representative Peter King, a New York Republican on the Homeland Security Committee, told CNN. Yeah, that's the story. That's the confession. But I don't see how we can accept that. I mean, how do you get any more complicit in a complete breakdown of judgment, of morality, of conscience than that? The truth is obvious. They did it because they were motivated by Muhammad's words and deeds to commit acts of terror on non-Muslims. That's the obvious. That's what they've confessed to. That's the every investigation of this thus far has come to that conclusion. And here's a congressman saying we can't accept that. Why? Because then they don't have any label to whitewash this. They can't say this was Al-Qaeda, and therefore our enemy is still this essentially defunct organization. That's why. Because when that's the truth, then it's a single word, Islam. Then the problem is Muslims. Then the problem is the Quran. Then the problem is the U.S. Constitution, which doesn't allow America to defend itself against a religion. So now what do you do? So here's the congressman saying, yeah, that basically seems to be the story. No matter where you look, that's the story, but I don't see how we can accept that. Here's another related story. I shared this with you briefly, but here's some more information on this. For a mommy and daddy Muslim to name their eldest son Tamerlane after Timur the Lame is one of the most grotesque confessions a religion has ever made. To think that this man is someone whose legacy should be immortalized in your son's name tells you just how warped the religion of Islam is. And we will return to the story of Timur the Lame when Shattering Myths returns in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're turning to the namesake of Tamerlane, the suspect number one in the Boston bombing. He was named after Timur, who conquered as a Muslim, not to open trade routes, as had Genghis Khan, his great-great-great. Grandfather, I assume. They were, Timur certainly claimed to be related to Genghis Khan and Kublai Khan. Whether or not he was, or that was mythical, I can't tell you, but he was a Mongolian by race, Muslim by religion. He did not, however, like Genghis Khan, just simply conquer to open up and protect trade routes, but simply for one reason, to do the same thing that Muhammad did. All of Muhammad's terrorist raids were exactly the same reason as were Tamerlane's, to loot and pillage. Every one of Muhammad's terrorist raids were designed to loot and to pillage, just as were Timur's, this most vicious of Muslims. The Timurid Empire did not last long after its founder died, because he rarely bothered to put up any governmental structure in place after he destroyed the existing order. While Timur professed to being a good and devout Muslim, he obviously felt no compunction about destroying the jeweled cities of Islam and slaughtering their inhabitants, including Damascus and Baghdad. You know, this idea that a Muslim loves other Muslims is just total nonsense. Even Yahweh knew that it would be the case, as he spoke of Muslims, saying that their brother's hand will be raised against them, and their hand will be raised against their brother, and that they will live in hostility with the whole world. They are hostile to one another. So the fact that Timur was a good Muslim and that he killed Muslims in addition to non-Muslims is just part of the definition of being a Muslim. The Quran even tells Muslims to kill Muslims. About So he slaughtered the inhabitants of cities like Damascus and Baghdad. They were only bejeweled because of the stolen loot that Muhammad's legacy had wrought. His intent seems to have been to make his capital at Samarkand, the first city of the Islamic world. Contemporary sources say that Timur's forces killed around 19 million people. So Tamerlane, Timur the Lame, Tamerlane, killed 19 million people. That's how savage he was. That number may be slightly exaggerated, but he does seem to have enjoyed massacring people just for the enjoyment, just for the pleasure of seeing people suffer and die. He would typically create mountains of skulls, cut off people's heads, and just pile mountains of beheaded individuals in the middle of a town that he had conquered. So for Shannarev to have named their child Tamerlane tells you a great deal about this individual. We read yesterday in the news, speaking of this same thing, and I think we'll be done with it with this last story, that that Jokhar and Tamerlane had decided they were going to set off another bomb, this one in New York City. It's not the FBI investigative team, however, that found this out. They referenced this when they kidnapped the carjacked the car and were bragging about this. It's interesting that the reason that police found them is because the guy whose car they carjacked managed to escape. So here's these, you know, armed to the teeth Muslim terrorists, one armed, unarmed guy in a car. He manages to escape, and he calls the police and say, you know, here I am. These guys have confessed to the crime. They've bragged to me that they did it, and they're at this 7-Eleven. You know, go after them. That's how the police were tipped off. That's how the police came to know that they were going to bomb in New York. One of the reasons that we are so lost, I mentioned this story in passing, but the Royal Canadian Mounted Police say that they have spoiled an Al-Qaeda plot that was sponsored and financed by Al-Qaeda in Iran to derail trains in eastern Canada, trains between Toronto and New York City. And he says that the plot was inspired and financed and conducted specifically by Al-Qaeda in Iran. And he says, when I speak about supported, I mean Al-Qaeda in Iran directed the plot and they provided it with guidance. That has got to be the dumbest thing that I have heard a government official say in a very long time. We'll talk about that in a moment.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research. In July, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that...